Let's take out our Bibles and turn to the text tonight, Matthew chapter 22. Again, we continue with these different parables that Jesus is talking about the kingdom of God. Remember last week where we saw Jesus speaking to the people about those tenants that would come, and each time another group is killed, and they finally, the landowner thinks that by sending his son, that finally they would be able to listen to the son, and they don't, they kill him in return. It's this ongoing teaching. Remember last week? The messenger comes and they eliminate the messenger. The messenger comes and they don't listen. And finally the son comes and they kill him. And this is really like the Jesus looking back in the history of the prophets coming again, saying to the people, get your life on track. People and nation of Israel come again back to God, and they continually to reject messenger after messenger, and finally Christ comes and they reject him as well. This is verse 45 of chapter 21 that leads us into the text tonight. When the chief priests and the Pharisees heard Jesus' parable, they knew he was talking about them. They got it. They understood that Jesus was putting his finger into their chest. You, Pharisees, are the ones who are not listening. You, leaders of Israel, are not being the ones who are leading your people to listen to the messengers. In the end, you now are ramping up to even kill the Son. And of course, that whole idea that the Son was Jesus was anathema to the Pharisees and the leaders. How could this be that this person walking the face of the earth is, quote, the Son of God? Verse 46, they looked for a way to arrest him, but they were afraid of the crowd because the people held that he was a prophet. The people got it. They understood he was one of the messengers. They figured it out. And then yet, who are the Pharisees afraid of? Not the one who can destroy the soul in hell. Remember, that's what Matthew had said earlier. But they're afraid of the human pushback. Fascinating. We don't know how quickly it was that Jesus moves into this next parable, chapter 22. I'll read it in its entirety, and we're going to just kind of pick this apart. There's so much here. Jesus spoke to them again in a parable saying, the kingdom of heaven is like. So again, if there's anything for you to remember about Matthew, the entirety of the gospel is this constant talk about the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son. He sent his servants to those who had been invited to the banquet to tell them to come, but they refused to come. Then he sent some more servants and said, tell those who have been invited that I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle have been butchered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding banquet. But they paid no attention, and they went off, one to his field, another to his business. The rest seized his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his army and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. Then he said to his servants, the wedding banquet is ready, but those I invited did not deserve to come. Go to the streets, the street corners, and invite them to the banquet, anyone you find. So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, both good and bad, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. Friend, he asked, how did you get in here without wedding clothes? And the man was speechless. Then the king told the attendants, tie his hand up and his foot and throw him outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are invited, but few are chosen. In some ways, this text is hard. There's some hard language at the end of this. But to set the stage for this entire parable, it is helpful to know that Jesus is like talking about the history of the church. Chapter 21 about the tenants is a look back, the messengers that come again and again, the prophets of God. And then finally the Son comes and there's that rejection, a looking back and even up to the point of Christ. Chapter 22 turns the page. It's looking now forward at the point of seeing Christ coming and now the movement of the gospel forward to the Gentiles. That's where chapter 22 lands us. It's helpful to understand how wedding invitations went during that time. It's interesting, lately we've almost can kind of get a little bit more of flavor for this. When I was getting married, it was you send out an invitation and had the date, the time, and all the details on it, and you expected people to maybe RSVP and come. But there's this new idea today where you send out a save the date card, and you can kind of see that, and then all it has on it is a date. That's it. And then it's later that the invitation comes where it has a few more details. This isn't exactly parallel to this, but it's similar. And how it would work is a wedding invitation would be sent out, kind of the save the date thing. You are invited to the king's banquet on such and such a timing, just broad generalities. And then finally the herald comes or some servant who then comes along and says, the feast is ready, come. It's ready to go, the food is on, it's hot, come. So there was always the sense of a twofold invitation. And you can kind of pick that up in those opening verses. The king is heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son. Interesting, again, this picking up of the word, the banquet for the Son. Kind of, again, helping people to understand, who is this Jesus? The Son of God, the Son of the King. Verse 3, he sent his servants to those who had been invited. Now, does that make sense? There's the second of the invitation. First invitation, and now the king says, servant, the food is hot. Let's go. It's time to celebrate. So go out and call the people that have been invited to come to enjoy the feast. And then that terrible last sentence of verse 3. The ESV has the words, and they would not come. There's a sense in this word, the verb, is this ongoing refusal. No matter how loud or how encouraging the servants would have been, it was this ongoing, no, we're not coming, period. You can call us all you want. I know we got the invitation in the mail, but great, the food's hot, but we're not coming. No. So who are these people that Jesus is poking a finger at? Who is he pointing out? Well, sadly, these are the people of Israel who had heard the invitation of the gospel to come to know the Messiah, but had put up their hands and says, we want to have nothing to do with him. We don't believe he is who he says he is. Verse 4, then he sent more servants and said, tell those who have been invited, hear the invitation. And he's like saying, you don't want to miss this. I have gone to the nth degree to make this banquet as wonderful of a party as you can imagine. Oxen and fatted, not calf, but cattle. I mean, we're talking big party. Everything's ready. Let's go. Come, let's celebrate. And verse 5 picks up a theme that we've been hearing again and again throughout the book of Matthew. But they paid no attention. This time it's as if there's just nothing there. They don't even look. They don't even kind of move away from what they're doing. And note that they go off to not wickedness. I think that's such an interesting thing. They go off to their normal life. And it's as if Jesus kind of like in like a bookends puts all of life together, the one who farms and the one who's the businessman. It's basically all of life. Not wickedness that they went off to. They just went off to life. And the problem is they got so tied up with their normal doing of life that they couldn't hear the invitation to come. Ears closed. We got to make money. Don't bother us. Paying no attention. And then verse 6. As if to make the point a little more clearer, the rest seized his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. Who's he referring to here? Many feel that this is a picture of what happened as the disciples would go out to proclaim the good news. They're saying, that even as Jews themselves saying, come, the Messiah has come, he's here. And now they are not only not going to listen, but they can't stand the message of the servants of God. They don't not only not want to have it be spoken, they want nothing to happen that anyone else would ever come to the banquet. The messenger and the message have to be eradicated. The rest seized his servants, mistreated, and killed them. Just think about Paul. When he was named Saul, and how he was very much a product of that very reality. Stephen, don't tell me that you're proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ. And they would go out and eventually stone him. We note all along in chapter 22, again, this similar language that we picked up in Matthew. Who is the one that is the actor in this text? It's the king. The king is the one who sets up the banquet. It is the king who goes to tell the servants to go make the call. It is the king who is the one who welcomes the people into the banquet. As I've said so often from this pulpit, God is the first mover. God is the one who is the caller. God is the one who activates the heart. It is always starts with God. No different in our parable here today. Verse 7, but the king was enraged. We saw in chapter 21, and we see again in chapter 22, of a God who offers mulligans, of a God who gives another chance. He first goes, they don't want to come. He goes again, they don't want to come. And now in this final cause, they finally kill his servants. God's long-suffering patience runs out. And God says no more. Many feel verse 7 is a direct indication of what's going to happen in 70 AD when Jerusalem is sacked and the temple is destroyed, not leaving one stone on another. If you ever have been to Jerusalem, you can see yet today how those stones are all toppled. There's a point where the patience of God runs out. And it did in 70, and we know that one day, in Christ's return, there'll be a division of the sheep and goats. In the middle of that, God is patient. The burning of Jerusalem is just but a picture, a snapshot of what's to come. And then verse 8. Then he said to the servants, "The wedding banquet is ready." He could have put the food away, right? Give up, done. But this is the gift of God. He moves on. "The wedding banquet is ready, but those I invited did not deserve to come. Now go to the street corners and invite to the banquet anyone you find." Where do you think you see that word again, of the verse 9 opening? The exact same word at the end of the book of Matthew, when Jesus says, "Therefore, go, go." I want you to turn to Romans chapter 11, because really Paul explains, I think, this parable, this section, a little bit more in Romans chapter 11. I'm going to read a few verses and then I'm going to make a few comments. This is Paul now speaking, long after this time of the parable being spoken, and then this is what Paul says. "Again, I ask, did they stumble," that would be Israel, "so as to fall beyond recovery? No, not at all. Rather," here's the point, "because of their transgression, salvation has come to the Gentiles to make Israel envious. But if their transgression means riches for the world, and their loss means riches for the Gentiles, how much greater riches will their fullness bring?" Do you get the point? Jesus is highlighting what is to come. The banquet is ready. The table has been prepared. And if it's filled with just the ethnic people of Israel, there is no space for anyone else. And Paul is making the point clear then. What happens when Israel rejects the king, who step away from the banquet table and say, "I don't want to have anything to do with"? The reality is, it's like the chairs are now empty for somebody else to fill. And in God's provision, in God's providence, God flings open the doors to Gentiles and says, "Now it's time for you to come in and fill the chairs." They would otherwise have been full. And again, using Paul's words then, is this is the great gift of God. How great, and as we're going to sing at the end of the service, marvelous this grace truly is. "Go then," verse 9 of chapter 22 of Matthew, "to the street corners." Get out there and now get in the Gentiles. Let them know that the feast is ready. And not just the good looking, not just the ones who have it all together. I love this one. It says, "So the servants went out into the streets and they gathered all the people they could find." both good and bad. I can just see Jesus walking along the streets and he sees Zacchaeus. In the eyes of the people in that area, the bad of the bad. And he says, "I get down out of that tree. I want to go to your house today." The demon possessed, the blind, the sick, the people who had nothing to do with the gospel, come into the feast. The food's ready. What a beautiful evangelistic text, isn't it? Get out to the street corners and make sure they all know this gospel is for you. You don't have to be a certain kind, a certain flavor, a certain this, that, or the other thing. Good, bad, and then the wedding hall is filled with guests. So far, so good. We see all the celebration kicking off. And then all of a sudden, it's like there's this warning. And ask yourself as we read this, who is he warning? Who is Jesus now speaking to? In some ways, he's already spoken to Israel, those who have rejected the messenger. They aren't coming to the feast. He's already spoken to the leadership, the Pharisees. They are the ones who have killed the servants of God. So who is he addressing next? Verse 11, you can see the king now coming into the wedding hall. When the king came in to see the guests, can you see it? He's looking at all the people. Finally, the hall is ready. The food is prepared. It's time to eat. And all of a sudden, he notices a wedding crasher. A man was there and was not wearing wedding clothes. Now, if you're like me, I read that text first and think, wait a minute. Didn't you just go to the street corners and grab these people up and welcome them in? What did you expect that they would have wedding clothes on? Well, many have explained that it's very likely that a king would provide wedding clothes upon your welcoming to the place. This was customary, and you see this often in various points of the Old Testament. The king putting on clothing or giving somebody a robe to enter into his presence, to enjoy the banquet. That's possibly the picture out there. So here's this person who's come in to the wedding hall and he doesn't have the right clothing on. Note the words friend. Not caustic, not harsh, but inquisitive. Help me understand, the king is saying. How did you get in here without wedding clothes? And I think the words at the end of that verse are so instructive. When the truth cuts through your heart, you just are silent. He knows he was found out. It's obvious, right? You look around all the people and they've got the clothing on and you don't. Who is the person without the appropriate attire? I'll get to that answer, but look what happens, as you have already heard, what happens to the guest. Then the king told the attendants, tie him hand and foot and throw him outside into the darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Many are invited, but few are chosen. Who is this a warning to? I think the commentators who have answered the question this way, I think, are spot on. It's a warning to false Christians. It's a warning to people who on the exterior give all the look that they are, quote, guests. But inside, they have not changed. This is the whitewashed people. We've seen a picture of this already earlier in Matthew chapter 7. Remember when Jesus spoke in Matthew chapter 7? Verse 15. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. And then here's the thing. By their fruit, you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes with thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Do you hear that similar language? Cut down and thrown into the fire. Thrown out of the banquet hall where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. And now listen to verse 21. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter into the kingdom of heaven. You see, that's the guest who came into the door saying, look, I'm one of all of you. Just look at me. I know the king. Wedding crasher. And all of a sudden the king comes around and says, who are you? Some will say, Lord, Lord. But only he who does the will of my Father in heaven truly know the king. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons and perform miracles? And then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. This is how I summarize that. You profess, but you do not produce. Let me say it again. You profess, but you do not produce. Our wedding guest here in Matthew 22 says, I belong. I'm a guest. See, here I sit at the table. But their life has betrayed that profession. There is no fruit that comes out. And that fruit would be evident in the clothing they wear. This is what Matthew's driving at. You would see by their life, they belong. Now, doesn't that sound like works righteousness? No. Who was the inviter? The inviter is God, who welcomes them in. The question is, do you belong? You profess, and it either leads to a life of fruit building and fruit growth, or it's completely absent, and it denies your profession. I love how, again, my favorite author in this says it so well. True faith in God's imputed righteousness, we'll get to that in a little bit, moves believers to want to be righteous personally. You see, some have seen this text and said, oh, the clothing, oh, that's all Pauline talk. Pauline talk, which is imputed righteousness, righteousness that is given to you, imputed to you, given to you by Christ. This is the Christ clothing of Roman or Colossians chapter 3, you see? Now you have to have that clothing, in other words, to be in the banquet. But I think that's Paul talking, not Matthew speaking. We've seen Matthew over and again talk about what is it to have a life that shows your profession. I think that's what he is speaking here about. But lest we see a wedge between Matthew and Paul, no. Let me read the sentence again. True faith in God's imputed righteousness moves believers to want to be righteous personally. Profession produces something. And he goes on to say that true faith is not as a basis for standing before God. No, only Christ can give that to us. But it's an evidence of wanting to please the Father who has graciously invited us in. My life is activated, and evidence of that activation is the fruit that I bear. Is the sign of the life in me. You know this tree song? That's the whole point. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, Paul makes it abundantly clear. You know this text probably as the love chapter, but it's the front end of that text that really says the same thing. This is chapter 13. If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but have not, you say it, have not love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. Oh, if I have the gift of prophecy and I can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flame but I have not love, I gain nothing. My profession and my production have to be one and the same. Our wedding crasher of chapter 22 thought he could just kind of slide in the back door. But his wedding clothes betrayed him. His failure to produce fruit betrayed him. And standing in front of the king says what he said in Matthew 7. Who are you? I don't know you. And the man was speechless. The last verse seems hard, but yet in the context makes so much sense, for many are invited. This whole text is a recollection of the many invited. Come, and they say no, no, come, and no, they have to go off and do their work in the field and in their business. Come, and no, they destroy the messenger. The wedding banquet, yes, is prepared. But there are some who simply will not accept the invitation. I think in the end, this is Matthew, Jesus' warning to pew sitters who occupy a seat but have no life. What a challenge, isn't it? But what a beautiful reminder that God is the God who says, come to the table. Come, enjoy the feast. As one said, it could have been a funeral service, but instead God invites us to a glorious party filled with food and drink. This is the picture of the kingdom of heaven. And he welcomes us in. So may our lives be one that not only say we belong, but show a profession that produces.